On today's episode of The Good Word, Amin Alhassan joins us to discuss Dame Time and the Bucks maybe going all the way to the conference finals. How far can the Clippers go without a healthy Kawhi? And Anthony Edwards just can't wait to be king. All that and a lot more coming up on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast. It is playoff time, y'all, which means after the first weekend, we have to go to my man, Amin Alhassan. Amin, are you in Phoenix? Are you in Miami? Where you at today?
I'm in Phoenix. I'm at home. I've been home since the play-ins, but I start my travel tomorrow when I head to Boston for Wednesday's game two for Heat Celtics.
For those who don't know, Amin Alhassan is a part of the Dan Le Batard and Friends Network, as well as the law offices of Amin Alhassan, where, you know, clearly he likes having some fun with stupid people. I just feel like that's just the way to say it, right?
Yeah. And if you've been a victim of viral decontextualization, call us. One call and Amin will get your reputation clean.
Yes, because I've played basketball with Amin Alhassan one time, and he doesn't shoot like that.
Hey, man, that was my whole thing. The whole time, I was like, hey, man, you don't have to take my word for it. There's numerous NBA media people, NBA players, NBA coaches who have seen me play or played with me. They know I don't shoot like that, so, like, I don't care.
Yeah, it's just a bad. It just visually looks a certain way. That's all. Like basically what it comes down to is
viral decontextualization is what it comes down to.
Hey, sometimes shit happens. But on today's show, we're going to hit two games from Saturday's game one. We're going to hit two games from Sunday's game one. And maybe we'll touch on some stuff in between. But I mean, first, we should start with Sunday's game ones. I'm in L.A., where, of course, I'm going to start with Clippers Mavs. I'm going to give you the choice of whether you want to start with, you know, sending the goons in Miami and Boston, or the late game kerfluffles that we saw in Oklahoma City, or Dame Time being resurrected in Milwaukee. Which one you want to go with?
You know what's funny? I'm going to go with Dame Time.
Okay.
As much as I want to roast my guy Brian Scalabrine for the conspiracy theory of all conspiracy theories. It only took one game for it to come out, but it was like holy hell. But no, I'm going to talk about the Bucks and the Pacers.
Okay.
And I want to make it clear to everybody that I am not saying that, everything is fixed for the Bucks. But before the series and before the playoffs started, I've been saying I think the Bucks are going to do a lot better than people expect them to. I was shocked to see how many people have the Pacers winning the series. And I said, what do you mean? I said, well, Giannis isn't playing. I'm like, I don't think you guys understand exactly how the playoffs work. Milwaukee, yes, they've struggled. Yes, they've underachieved. But you know what else they've been able to do in the last week? Have practices, which is something that you don't get to do during the regular season. So they got to have, in essence, basically a mini training camp and really nail down what they want to do. Because Vinny, as you know, when you get to the playoffs, when you play in the regular season, every day you're playing a different team.
Yep.
So every day we're talking about a different kind of opponent, different scout, whatever. We have our base defense that we run against everybody. We might tweak it here and there for some special cases. But for the most part, we do everything the same, one size fits all.
Right.
When we get to the playoffs, everything is now tailor-made.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a veteran team to be told for a week in advance, hey, we're guarding every pick and roll like this. Hey, we're doing switches like this. Every single time, offensively, this is what we're going. These are our points of emphasis. There is a comfort in that routine that for a young team, they don't know what the hell they're just out there playing.
Right.
So I say all that to say that game one's result did not surprise me. But more importantly, the fact that Damian Lillard, who has looked uncomfortable and out of place and fish out of water for the entire regular season, all of a sudden looked like Roy Jones Jr. talking about, y'all must have forgot. Like, yeah, man, this dude, when you put him in this environment, this is home for him. Mm-hmm, this is familiarity. And so, yeah, I had the Bucks winning that game. Yeah, I got the Bucks winning that series. And Vinny, I'm gonna say it right here, and people are gonna go nuts.
Go ahead and say it. Give it to me.
Yeah, I got the Bucks in the conference finals.
I don't think that's a hot take. I don't think that should be viewed as a hot take, right?
People think they're gonna be first round knockouts. There's a large contingent. I'm not talking about fans. I'm talking about people in the media picking the Pacers over the Bucks. It could happen. I'm not saying, oh, you're nuts. I don't know. But I'm just saying I think there is a level of broad kind of underestimation of what happens to a veteran team when they get to the playoffs.
And here's the other part. With no Giannis, Dame can do what Dame has always been able to do. Oh, this is all on me. I can take all the shots to find my rhythm. I can play at my pace. You guys are going to dance to my music. Cool. We already know Dame has always had problems defending. Like, that's never been something that's been, you know, like special to this year. And the Bucks do have problems defending on the perimeter. But here's the thing, I mean, about the Pacers. A, I don't know if teams can keep up that pace in playoff basketball, for one. Like, traditionally, the game always slows down. B, and this is more importantly, since Tyrese Halliburton's hamstring injury that he kind of came back from or rushed back from because he wanted to make sure he could still be in line for that Supermax extension, he has not been the same dude. You know what I mean? He's not the same dude, they don't really have a chance no matter what type of alternate side playmaking you have with the Pascal Siakams of the world or running things through Miles Turner. Like, he's the guy that everything has to derive from for them to even have a chance. It's not Giannis that's the most important player in that series. It's that guy on the other side, and I don't think he can get there.
And he only had 7 shots last night. Like, that's not enough. Like, again, I want to offer grace to the Pacers. Outside of Pascal Siakam, Miles Turner's been in the playoffs. Miles Turner's also never been out of the first round. Like,
right,
so there's
right.
just an element of, like, these guys are all trying to figure this thing out, whereas the Bucks have a bunch of dudes who have figured it out multiple times throughout their career. Like, the playoffs always, barring a massive talent gap, the playoffs will always prefer or give preference to the veteran team.
Yes.
I don't know if you want to talk about it right now or not, but, like, think about, like, that Thunder-Pelicans game last night.
Let's do it. Go ahead.
Right?
Like,
that on paper, Thunder should have destroyed them, right? So how does a game that features an MVP candidate, like of MVP finalists, I should say, in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, playing at home in front of a raucous crowd against a team that's shorthanded, right? They're missing perhaps their best player in Zion Williamson, their second best player, Brandon Ingram, having a bad game. How does that come down to a CJ McCollum 3-point attempt at the end? And it's because a veteran team, and it's not like the Pelicans are super veteran. They're just more veteran than
just been through a little bit more. They just did a little bit more.
They've got a little bit of a rind on them, right? They've been through this in a way that the number of guys on Oklahoma City who've been through this. They say my first time at the rodeo. This is their first time at the rodeo.
Yep.
So again, I expect, especially if Zion doesn't come back, I expect the Thunder to win the series. But you see how the experience gap can close the talent gap and make something that should be an easy to, like, put it in chalk kind of affair into something that's in question.
You know what the thing that struck me about that game? Hey, Chet Holmgren, y'all. Like, don't get me wrong. Victor Wembanyama is the total future, right? There's no doubt in my mind about that. And I won't say that Chet has gotten overlooked, but I will say that in the vein of everything with Oklahoma City, with Jalen Williams and SGA and all those guys there, he's gotten a little undervalued. And that play that he made against Larry Nance, where, A, you're covering the rim and you're baiting a guy who's also 2 feet in the paint to go up and you know that you can get it, that's a vet move. You know what I mean? That's a vet. To me, A, I don't know if you feel like this, A, New Orleans' late game execution, I won't say it was predictable, but I will say nothing caught me off guard, whether it was CJ trying to take somebody off the dribble, which I do not think is necessarily the best usage of CJ down. You know, he can make tough shots, but that ain't what I want him doing. Same thing for Brandon Ingram. Like, I was a little surprised that they did not try to make Oklahoma City a little more uncomfortable, that they just went to ISO. Like, they played sometimes like a team that did not trust itself.
Right. No, I agree with you. And they've done that in the past. Like, that's the one thing to be clear is that I've never walked away thinking like, wow, the Pelicans ran some great late game stuff. Most of their success has been getting it to Ingram, getting it to CJ, getting into Zion at the elbow, and then letting them go to work. And like, that works sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't, like we saw last night. So I think ultimately they're not going to, it's not an X's and O's thing that's going to happen. It's going to be more of guys understanding the moment, understanding the situation, and rising up to that level and to that standard versus, again, a team that's coming into it, and this is the first time they're experiencing many of these emotions and these kind of situations.
Well, one thing I will say about OKC, just as a whole, I mean, and I felt like I heard Stan Van Gundy say this a couple of weeks ago, and it really got me, because when you think of OKC, you think of them being a young team and experienced. Stan said, they don't do young, dumb stuff. They don't do young, stupid team stuff. They don't have the lapses in defense. They don't throw the ball around. Like, there was a couple of plays where clearly they looked a little skittish, but when it came down late, Shea was at the top. We're going to find and hunt the switch that we want. Oh, we got CJ on him, who's a, you know, that's Urkel out there. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to get a few inches shorter. He's going to dip his hand in the cookie jar. Boom. Like, they do know. They do have a veteran sense of bread and butter, I think, Amin, that even if they were skittish early, they found themselves a little bit later. You know what I mean? Like, I will give them that for game one.
They are a smart team. I agree. I think Stan might have said it on Lebatard show when I was on with him. He said, this team does not play like a young team. He's right. Average age of this team is 22 years old. And a lot of that was Gordon Hayward.
Yep.
Right? Pulling the average up. Right? They don't play like a team that's 22 years old. But I do know that this crucible, that is the playoffs, will test even the most sound and savvy first-timer. Like, it comes, and it will come to them as well. Probably not in the first round again, but at some point soon, they're going to reach a point where execution does not come to them because they've never seen it before. I think it was so many plays, Vinny, throughout the years, throughout the playoffs, where a guy comes up. I'll give you a great example. 5 years ago, 4 years ago, can't even remember. No, 5 years ago, it was Heat versus Sixers in the first round. And the Sixers had run this play like three times during the game. And it's like they throw it to Simmons on the left baseline, and then they run some like kind of screening action, and then they kick the ball back up to the top. And it worked really well. And then the fourth time, they did in the fourth quarter, and Dwayne Wade, before the pass is even thrown to Simmons, who isn't even like the actual target, he jumps the pass, steals it, goes out, lays it up.
Right.
And everyone's like, oh, what a great anticipation play by Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade's 100 years old. He didn't anticipate. That wasn't quick twitch reflexes.
He's seen it before.
He probably seen it in the film. They definitely seen it happen during the game. They definitely talked about it as a staff with the players. Like, hey, this is the tell. And he read the tell and he did it. That comes from, at that point for Dwayne Wade, 1,700,000 years of I've done this. I've seen these things. I've seen teams do stuff that works and like, yeah, we like it. Let's keep doing that.
Yep.
And it turned against them. And so, like, these are the things that, like, ultimately, again, the Sixers won that series because the talent gap was there.
Yep.
And I feel the same thing for Oklahoma City here. The talent gap is there unless Zion comes back and then things start changing, whatever. But ultimately, there's going to be moments where they're executing their stuff.
Right.
But they don't realize there's all sorts of tells that they're giving out that vet teams will take advantage of.
Yes, 82 games compared to now, you can focus in completely on scout. And dudes are just totally locked in as opposed to a video playing on a loop in a locker room and everybody just playing around on their phones. Now, we can do one thing. We can do one of two things. I mean, we can either hit on Scal, our buddy Scal, saying send in the goons, Or we could talk about the resurgence of James Harden and the Clippers on the Mavs. Which one you want to hit on? I'm giving you the choice.
No disrespect to you. I know you are in Clipper Central right now. You were at the game. You probably have a bunch of insights that nobody else has or whatever. I want to talk about Scal, man.
What is he talking about?
What is he talking about?
Yeah, he believes that. It was a minute, like what? Let's set the stage. A minute left. The Heat were up by like 50. I mean, the Heat were down by like 50. And then they came back to being down by like, 35 or whatever. Right. I'm exaggerating, but they might have been down by like 16 at this point.
It was one of those respectability runs, right?
Yes. Yes.
You go on a run to make the score look a little bit more respectable than what it actually was.
So my thing was, even before the play, why the hell is Tatum and Brown in the game in the first place at that point?
We ask this every year, man. I feel like every year in the playoffs, there's one team beating another team's head in. And you know what the messed up part is? You get those little respectability runs, and the coaches say, see, that's why. I'm sure T. Lou is probably saying that after what happened in their game, where they were beating the Mavs pretty handily most of the night. And then the Mavs make a respectability run, which, at one point it was like, wait a second, is this an actual comeback?
Right.
But it's like, that's what the coach, they're all paranoid, man. They lose sleep at night of like, hey, we were up 40, and then I put in, Luke Kornet. Next thing you know, we're down 4. How did it happen? I'll never make that mistake again. But Brian Scalabrine.
It used to be Peyton Pritchard, except now Peyton Pritchard can play. So we can't even make the Peyton Pritchard jokes no more. You know what I mean?
As an aside, let me just say real quick before we get to Scout.
Yeah.
The fact that Joe Mazzulla is not a finalist for Coach of the Year, and hasn't even been a name talked about for the entirety of the year, staggers me. Look, I get it. There's a lot of Mazzulla jokes. Lord knows, I've made most of them. He is an easy target in terms of jokes, but
he is.
Number one record in the league.
Yes.
Number one offense in the history of the game.
Yes.
Best net rating. Got his two stars to, I won't say take a step back, but like, divert some of their attention away from scoring to making everybody else better.
Mm-hmm.
Player development in Hauser, Pritchard, Derek White. Remember Derek White in San Antonio? It staggers me that no one seems to fathom. This dude didn't used to be this good.
Right.
Right. And then Kristaps Porzingis integration as a third banana. Again, on paper, sounds great.
But he was the guy that couldn't fit with Luka. You know what I mean? And like, he was the guy in Washington that people were like, oh, he's at a weigh station. We don't know how good he actually is. So I think people default to giving a lot of credit to Brad Stevens as opposed to Mazzulla because we made Mazzulla the butt of the jokes.
You gotta be able to make it work. That's part of the coaching, is make it work. And he made it work. And then finally, you kind of alluded to it. Pritchard, Hauser, and Kornet, rotation players for most of the year.
Yeah.
Dude. I'm sorry. Like, this isn't the 2017 Warriors he's trotting out there. Tatum and Brown are really good players. The rest of this team is kind of like, all right, this ain't the Monstars. And
he's
made them play that way. So I want to give him a shout out, even though my man, it makes it really easy for me to do my routine. Having said all that, Brian Scalabrine believes, as you set it up, like they're up 1,000 or whatever. Tatum is still in the game. Brian Scalabrine believes that Eric Spoelstra, one of the 15 greatest coaches who ever lived, a man
probably
who's...
Probably shorter, on a shorter list, to be perfectly honest.
The best coach in the NBA. I think at this point, when you've, in the last 4 years, you've been to the conference finals 3 times and the finals twice with a roster that nobody would stay on the start of the year. Yeah, I'd like that roster.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like those. Like, you think this guy is going to, by the way, and not send like Orlando Robinson or someone
Duncan
expendable.
Robinson. Duncan Robinson. You say Orlando Robinson.
No, Orlando Johnson. Excuse me. I got Duncan Robinson. not like Orlando Johnson or like Thomas Bryant.
Right.
Someone expendable. Like,
right.
You're going to send his starting guy, right? Like, his one of his main rotation players to go do that? Like, that? Come on, Scal. You're better than that. Scal's better. And by the way, I just want to say, because I brought up and people like, well, Scal's such a Boston guy. Like, he played for balls. He's from Southern California. Don't get the redhead fool you, man. This dude is out here surfing. He not no Boston dude. Come on, Scal.
He don't have the accent. He don't have the accent. He don't have the Boston ornery. He don't have that other thing that Boston does. You know what I mean? Especially this time of year where they start seeing more people that don't look like them. He don't have all that. Like, this is a different ball game there.
That's why Scal's cool, because he's not from Boston.
Exactly. They need more imports, right? They need to import more people like Scal. When I first saw the play, I thought it looked funky. But I thought it looked clumsy. I didn't think it looked like, oh, he's going to push Jason Tatum. Like, that's a really, really dangerous play. And A, if you're going to really make a play on somebody like that, you're going to do the Rajah Bell. You're going to do, hey, Jason Tatum just drove by me, and I'm going to try to put him in a quick clothesline. You know, clothesline from hell, like one of them wrestling moves or something like that. That wasn't the case here. He was pushed a little bit, and at some point, you can't stop yourself, because if you try to stop yourself, you wind up busting your knee out because you're doing something. You know what I mean?
The other part of this is, like,
I just felt like he said, ah, fuck it.
But no, you know what I mean? I think he was crashing.
Yeah.
And then at the last minute, he realized, I have no chance of getting this. And he kind of, like you said, it was clumsy. But like, here's the number one, like, if you want proof positive of whether this was intentional or not in the NBA, and not just this part, but in the NBA, guys who are intentionally doing that stuff, they don't like go, oh, shit, and try to help you up afterward.
Right.
They walk, at best, they just walk away. Walk away and do that 1,000-mile stare of like, nothing happened here. I just play basketball. At worst, they'll like stand over you and let you know.
My bad.
No, or not my bad. At worst, they're like, Sanori, let you know. I did this to you.
Yeah.
I did this to you, right?
Yeah.
But they don't help you up. Helping, right. Like, the immediate reaction by Kevin Martin's a good dude, a quality human being,
right?
Sportsman, etc. So I'm not trying to say that, like, yo, even this piece of shit try to help him. No, but the reality is that reaction is not the reaction of goonery, and it's definitely not the reaction of, like, to say, like, not only goonery, but like premeditated goonery, that like they told him, go do this. Not like he did it because he was frustrated or whatever.
Right.
I don't know, man. Like, sometimes, man, people just have bad plays.
It happens. Like, this is the downside. I won't say down. This is, put it like this to me. Dennis Rodman was like the master at knocking you over.
Right.
And then like helping you up and patting you on the butt. Like, Dennis was the master of, I didn't really just do that.
Did it with a smile on his face that lets you know, oh, you know what I'm doing. I'm doing the what was my man's name from Leave It to Beaver? Eddie Haskell. I'm doing the Eddie Haskell. Who, me? I'm just doing it. Like, that. Rodman was doing that. He wasn't trying to be helpful.
Right.
And like, I think we could tell. It's like when Joel Embiid gets, like, flops and then, like, has a big smile on his face as he gets the call. Like, oh my God, I actually got away with it. Like, come on, guys. We know what he's doing here. He's not actually just like, oh, I'm glad I'm okay. He's doing a thing.
Right. It's funny that you brought up Embiid. We're going to talk about him in a minute. But considering that injuries have been the thing, we're going to hit on the Clippers real, real quick. Do they have a shot if Kawhi Leonard does not play a game this series?
Well, I mean, game one would say yes, to have at least a shot.
Or do you think it's likely that they can win this series if you do not have Kawhi Leonard at 80% of himself? Well, let's say this. He ain't playing if he's just 80%.
Right.
He only playing if he's like damn near close to full strength.
I don't know. I wouldn't say that. I would say, like, here's the thing. Like, I was talking about this with one of my producers earlier. Like, Kawhi Leonard has become the poster child for load management and, like, particularly fan ire towards load management. When in reality, Kawhi Leonard has been like one of the most injured players over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's not sitting out because he doesn't feel like playing. He's sitting out because he's hurt. And there's no better example of this than, Vinny, I know you know this. I know this. I'm going to go ahead and spill the beans. I don't know why we all kept this thing a secret for years. But in the conference, in the 2021 playoffs, in the conference semis, Kawhi gets hurt against Utah. I believe it was game one or game two. And then doesn't play the rest of that series. And doesn't play the conference finals against the Suns. every game, the Clippers listed him as like questionable or day to day, and then we have to get updates. Is Kawhi going to play? We'll see. And like, oh yeah, he can't go. He had a torn ACL. He was never going to play. They knew it the moment it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But we played this game, and no one reported it. I don't know, out of deference or what it was. I don't do it because I'm not a reporter. But like, I people are like, you think Kawhi's going to play? I'm like, no, he's not playing again. Well, they say listed him as maybe. I'm like, there's no maybe. I don't know if it's gamesmanship or whatever.
Right.
But I think stuff like that, which has happened through the years for Kawhi Leonard, well, I guess the intention was to protect him and like not let on how hurt he really is. But it's done the opposite. It's made people skeptical anytime he sits out. So, for instance, he's been out the last couple of weeks of the season with, yep. I can't pronounce the word, tendinopathy. I don't know how to say it.
Let's just say inflammation. Let's just say that.
Inflammation. There you go. People all took that to, oh, no, they're locked in as a 4 or 5. They're resting him. Like, no, he's hurt. He can't play. And so get to game one, and he can't play. Now, to answer your question, if he doesn't play, let's not say if he's 80%, because I think if Kawhi Leonard can play, he's going to play.
Right.
But if he doesn't play, can they win this series? Absolutely. That's why you go out and get a James Harden. So that for these situations, it's like, what if we can't go? Well, then we got another guy here. And I think him and Paul George and Russ being the bench guy,
mm-hmm.
like they're enough. They're enough to beat the Mavericks. Now, having said that, I had Mavericks in 7 to start the series. So I'm already telling all myself that like, this is a very closely matched series.
Right.
The reality is, I think the Clippers can weather not having Kawhi out there on the floor. Now, how long can they weather it? We'll see. They already got one game. You know, every game they win, that buys them a little bit more time for him to continue to rehab.
And that's what I was thinking. That's because the players have been told Wednesday that Kawhi wasn't playing. We weren't told until game time. But Ty Lue, who I think is right up there with Spo as far as the best coaches in the league,
mm-hmm.
Ty Lue knew these guys have to be prepared to know that Kawhi is not coming to save them. That we have to basically look at it as if Kawhi comes, cool, that's helpful. But James, you need to have your mind right. Paul, you need to have your mind right. You guys are going to get more touches. We have to play a total different style without Kawhi Leonard on the floor. And the other thing with Kawhi, dude, that dude is a walking medical chart. Like, I'm shocked that by the end of, I think his extension kicks in next year, right? He will have squeezed out 16 years on a bad body. Like, we don't think of Kawhi as having bad body, but he has bad body, man.
Terrible. Yeah, terrible body. Like, I still go back to
2019.
The finals. 2019. He's literally dragging.
He's dragging.
He won that championship on one leg. It's one of the gutsiest playoff runs. I'm not talking about, like, finals. Because you got to start in the Philly series is when it gets that game 7 where everybody was scared to shoot. Fred VanVleet was on a milk carton and Pascal Siakam was just a scared little kid and Kawhi was like, "F it, give me the ball." And he was jumping about like an inch off the floor of every one of those shots. Like it started there and then conference finals against the Bucks, finals against the Warriors. This dude was dragging his leg, Vinny. He's been
dragging that leg ever since.
Ever since.
Let's be perfectly honest. He's been dragging that leg. I think the problem with Kawhi was the thing that happened with the Spurs, and everybody trusts the Spurs as an organization. Mm-hmm. So when it was like, oh, you betrayed this organization, that means that you're not actually hurting.
Right.
I'm very careful about getting inside somebody's body and telling them that they not hurt. When these dudes are conditioned to playing basketball.
I said it in 2019, the Spurs, the most secretive organization that we have, right? Run by a guy that, an Air Force graduate that wanted to go to the CIA, learned Russian, right? That's the organization we're talking about in terms of level of secrecy and like us against the world and all that stuff. We were getting weekly updates. And Tony said, I had the same injury and I came back like, I'm sorry. Like, they put out a smear campaign to make him look bad, to shame him basically into playing, even though multiple times he had been cleared to play on different injuries. He came back and either re-aggravated or wasn't healthy. And so there was a level from the Kawhi Leonard camp with fool me once, same on you, fool me twice, fool me, you ain't gonna fool me. Shout out to President Bush, right? And at that point, like he said, I'm going to only play when my body says I'm ready to play. And he got vilified for it and villainized for it. And that has carried with him everywhere else. And I think you're right. It's because the source of the smear was an organization that people held and I think continue to hold in high esteem.
Absolutely.
They're good guys. They would never do that, right?
Mm-hmm. No, they wouldn't. And it's just weird that the Spurs will be rewarded with Victor Wembanyama. But, you know, that's life be life sometimes.
Life
now,
be last
thing on this series. It looked like, from Ty Lue's perspective, not just James Harden turning back the clock, because we know that thing can go in a million different directions over the course of a series, right?
Yeah.
But defensively on Luka and Kyrie, it was, I don't respect anybody else that is out here shooting. And it's like, oh, not that it's necessarily going to sell out on those two guys, but they're not going to overreact to anything. Nobody else scored in double figures for the Mavs. And that looks like Ty's strategy is we're going to make life difficult as hell for Kyrie and Luka. And we're not even worried about the rest of these dudes. And we're going to punish you because you're light as hell on the inside.
Yeah, I mean, and I think some of the kind of the bright lights hit the Clippers. You know, I know Daniel Gafford was talking about, the Mavericks. Daniel Gafford was talking about, yeah, I wasn't ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I know people are like, how could you not be ready? But like, dude, Daniel Gafford's played in one playoff series in his life for the Wizards. Like, So it's like, there's an element of like, again, Luka and Kyrie, sure, they've got a lot of experience. Tim Hardaway Jr. has played in his fair share of playoff games. But like a lot of these guys, PJ Washington, like what the hell does he know about the playoffs, man? And like the level of intensity, whatever. Now, if you're the Mavericks, you say, well, we'll get them up to speed, like, and we'll let our two main guys carry. But like for a lot of these other guys, this is their first time at the rodeo, and that's difficult. The other thing I want to point out, and not to, I don't know, like, I know this is known. I don't know how much of a deal you should make of it. Derek Lively going through a lot in his personal life, man.
And that's something
real tough to deal with while you're going through your first playoff series. So I'm not making excuses, but I think what you saw.
That's some real life stuff he's dealing with, man.
These are the things that are happening behind the scenes that do have an impact. You know, rightly or wrongly, it has an impact on how people play and how teams perform.
Yeah, it's and for those who don't know, Derek Lively lost his mother, I think, was it breast cancer?
Yeah.
You know, and maybe a week or so before the regular season ended. Like, it's not something you just turn the page and you just, you know, people say the game is a refuge and all that other stuff. That sounds nice.
Yeah, man.
Man, life comes with you wherever you go, no matter what you're doing. So the Clippers and Mavs, that's just a compelling enough series, but that is a real life story that Derek Lively, their impressive center rookie, that's just something that he's going to have to deal with. Not just for this series, but for the rest of his life. But,
yeah.
Will, when we come back on the other side, we're going to go to some of the Saturday night games, including, well, I'm going to assume Amin wants to talk about the Lakers or the Knicks or the Ant-Man. We're going to hit on some one of those games. We come right back. Back here on The Good Word with Amin El-Hassan. Amin, I was on an airplane all day Saturday. Ironically enough, I sat one row behind Jim Harbaugh, who is one of the most interesting characters and one of the weirdest human beings I've ever come across in my entire life. But I was able, luckily, the TVs were working. I was able to watch the Saturday games. So once again, like we did in the first half, I'm going to give you the choice of whether you want to talk about, you know, Lakers and Nuggets, Knicks and 76ers, the Ant-Man against the Phoenix Suns, or the Cavs and Magic, which I'm sure you don't want to talk about. So I'll just give you the choice between the other compelling three games.
The Cavs and the Magic, a.k.a. the NBA TV series. Like as soon as it
they
came
are on
out,
NBA
like,
TV tonight. They are on NBA TV tonight.
But as soon as I knew that that was the matchup, I'm like, they're put them on NBA TV. Vinny, I just want to, before we start talking about games, I just want to point out that you were one row behind Jim Harbaugh is a very subtle way to say, oh yeah, you know, we were up in the the luxurious confines of first class. Either that, or he was in the last row of first class and you were in the bunkhead. Are you looking past that curtain, you could smell the, like, oh, that's the meal? Oh man, that smelled good over there.
I had chicken and potatoes. That's all I'll say. Go. I had chicken and
potatoes.
Shout
out to Delta One. let's see. I want to start. You know what? Let's start with the Lakers and the Nuggets.
Okay.
Because, again, I'm going to go off of things that I've heard, not from fans, not on Twitter, but from professionals covering our sport. I think the Lakers are better suited to beat the Nuggets than they were last year. I'm like, in what world? I felt like Jim Carrey in The Truman Show. What are you talking about? Who are you talking to? What are y'all talking about? Like, it blew my mind that anyone could have that opinion going into this series. And, you know, they messed around for a little bit. At some point, Denver did the thing where, like, oh, yeah, that's right, we're the Denver Nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, you know, they just went on a run. And then you cap it off, like, the exclamation point of all exclamation points. That dunk that Jokic had with LeBron trying to contest. Like, it's the combination of LeBron trying to do something that he's done thousands of times in his life,
mm-hmm.
successfully, mm-hmm. right? With this guy who now owns our league doing something that, I'll be honest, I ain't seen him dunk on a lot of people in my... Like, how many times have you seen Jokic dunk on someone? I've seen him dunk. No, dunk on someone contesting.
I don't think I can ever recall him dunking on somebody. Right? And even the first one he got was like a fingertip when LeBron was kind of chasing him and he was kind of trying to sort of get his steps. But LeBron got dunked on twice in that game. He got dunked on by Jamal Murray. Like, in Jamal Murray, who turns into 2002 version of Mike Bibby every time he plays the Lakers, where he just hits everything. I mean, there's two things I want to run by you. And it's something for me when a champion is like in full sort of bloom, like not when they're old, not when they're too experienced, but right when they sort of have everything working for them. They're in a game like that against the Lakers. What is the first round of conference finals? I mean, it seems like they collectively know how hard and how long do we have to play? We have to play just hard enough to keep this game within reach. Like, okay, we can be down 12, but we ain't gonna be down 18. We can be down 6, but we can't be down 9. Like those sort of things. And then boom, when they say we're going to play, mm-hmm. we can sustain concentration longer and harder at this in these moments than you can. And that's what that game looked like to me. Because the Lakers were, you know, doing everything right, so to speak. And you look up and they're only up 6. That had to be so deflating.
It is. It reminds me of, there was a tweet, I want to say Dragonfly Jones had it. This was like 7 years ago now, 8 years ago. And it said, you could play 45 minutes of perfect basketball against the Warriors. And they could mess around and do everything wrong. And then in the last 3 minutes of the game, they will play basketball so perfectly, those 3 minutes will overcome those 45 minutes that you just put together. And that's how I feel about the Nuggets. The Nuggets are in a place, like you said, they know exactly how much. It's almost like, think about people running in track and field, running like the mile, which is 4 laps around the track. And the Nuggets know, I can fuck around for these first 3, maybe even 3.5 laps, be in the middle of the pack, be, you know, whatever. But then once we start to hit that curve, okay, fun's over. And that's when you realize you, the Lakers, who have been kind of leading the pack for 3 laps, like, oh God, we're doing this. We might be actually doing this. And then all of a sudden you see them hit a level that you know. Oh, you're like, I thought we were all playing our best this whole time. Oh, right. You guys had another level. Oh yeah. No, I don't have one of those. And then it runs out. It runs out. And again, this sounds critical of the Lakers. It's not. Like, I think they perform admirably considering the age of their best player, considering the quality of the roster outside of their two best players. But that team is the best team in the league, dude, with the best player in the league.
Yep.
That's what it looks like.
And it ain't close. And here's the thing for me. LeBron had a great game.
Yeah.
But had nothing in the fourth quarter. Had absolutely nothing in the fourth quarter. Anthony Davis, whose numbers always seem to be somehow greater than his actual effect. Like, some people are saying, well, you should put him on Jokic. Jokic will put him under the rim. Like, even, and no matter where AD is, I don't know if you noticed this, they put him on, what's the kid's name? Peyton Watson. Peyton Watson. They put him on Peyton Watson, right? They put Peyton Watson into action. They're not letting Anthony Davis, they're not letting him rest
and roam and
disrupt everything else. We're going to put you in all these pick and rolls. We're going to hunt the best defensive player possibly on earth. We're going to hunt him down so it can disrupt everything else that they're doing, and the Lakers don't have an answer for that.
Yeah. Like, it's not unlike what people used to do. It's a very heavy Kawhi Spurs day to day, but people used to do that against the Spurs. You would get Kawhi, the guy Kawhi was guarding, would like just purposely stay away from the action.
Yep, yep.
So that he couldn't be in help. Like they try to, like, they know if like you involve him, it's not like, oh, he's going to lock up his man. That's not what they were trying to do. It's like, if you involve him, what we're doing over here, he gets the help in all these different places. And so, yeah, like the Nuggets are, they're not playing checkers. They're doing chess moves out here in terms of what they're doing. The other thing is, like, if you put Davis on Jokic, you're just going to limit how impactful Davis can be in every other part of the game.
And you're not winning that matchup anyways. It's a lose-lose for them.
Yep. And so, like, it's one of those things, Vinny, like, people ask, well, what can the Lakers do? And I'm like, I mean, bro, it's a 2-7 matchup. Like, this is, I don't know how many ways I got to explain this to you. Like, yeah, like, is there, like, I believe in every playoff series, there is a secret combination. Almost, like, think about, like, the way the NBA draft lottery works, which is there's 1,001 combinations, right? And the team with the best odds gets like, you know, 200 of those or whatever it is, right?
Right, right.
140 of those 1,001 ping pong balls, and you go down right there. I think you could do the same thing for a playoff series. There is a number of combinations that come out where the Lakers win this. They are incredibly limited, and they involve the Lakers playing perfect basketball and also the Nuggets, barring injury or suspension or whatever, just absolute bottling up, I guess, of Jamal Murray, forgetting how to play basketball, is what I would say.
Right,
like,
right.
Jamal Murray has to forget that he can run DHO with this big dude every single time and is going to throw everybody in the lurch. I guess it would be a situation where you were able to get their starting five off the floor and have to force them to get deeper into their bench. But again, in order to do that, you've got to have a deep bench, which the Lakers don't have. So it's like, I don't know what to say. This is
who you are. Yeah, this is who you are. This is, and I don't know if the Lakers would have that much of a better chance against Minnesota. I think they'd probably have a better chance against Oklahoma City. This is probably for them the worst possible matchup. And I don't think that people, you know, despite the fact that we gave the Lakers like gold plated medals last year for that competitive sweep, this is not the matchup that you want. I'm not saying they should have tanked New Orleans game or anything like that, but these are the breaks. Yeah. Like, you just don't match up well against this team. And Anthony Davis, in my opinion, can be the most impactful defensive player on earth. And he's whining about not winning Defensive Player of the Year, which I think he should be at least one of the finalists. He's on my ballot, but he's not one of the finalists.
Who would you kick out from those three that were named?
My ballot was, and I don't have any problems saying it, my ballot was Gobert 1, Anthony Davis 2, Victor 3.
Wow.
Now, Bam was still on my all-defensive team.
Dude, I'll say it. I think Bam Adebayo is the best defensive player in the NBA. I'm staggered that, like, it's taken this long for him to be, even in this conversation. Victor Wembanyama, to me, it's almost a feeling of like, we know he's going to do this. So now people are trying to be like, I'm the cool kid who knew before. Guys, he's going to win defense. He's going to win like a million of them.
Right.
But he doesn't deserve it this year. Not with a team. Forget about how bad that team was. There have been bad teams that were decent defenses. The Spurs were not one of those.
Right.
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 So to me, he's out. And then for Rudy Gobert, he's anchoring the best defense in the league. I get it. But to me, Bam's anchoring a similarly elite defense without as much help, I would say. And the most important part, I know DeMarcus Cousins has said this a lot. It's like, how can you be the best defender in the league if you can get played off the floor? And the one thing you can say about Bam is like, 1 through 5, he guards them all. There ain't a matchup. There are scenarios, there are lineups I can throw out there where I could say, yeah, I don't think I should have Rudy out here for this possession.
Right.
That doesn't exist for Bam Adebayo. To me, he is a bigger, more athletic Draymond Green when Draymond was at his peak.
Mm.
Like, smart as all hell.
Yeah.
Physical, quick, anticipatory, long arms, but then also an athlete, which yeah. Draymond, no offense, never like a plus athlete in his NBA career.
Right.
And then bigger. Draymond's listed 6'7". He may not even be that.
No.
I think he might be like 6'5". Six five.
Yeah,
he's 6'5". 6'5 and three quarters, I believe, was his measurement
in
the pre-draft. Like, Bam's a big dude. He's like a legit 6'9". So, to me, if there was going to be a name you would kick out of those three, it's Victor Wembanyama. I don't see how Bam has to struggle to get that recognition.
It wasn't an easy vote. Like, I think it's one of those things that if the guy doesn't make your ballot, all of a sudden it becomes, you hate our guy or something like that. Yeah. That's not the case at all. But funnily enough, the guy who might be the most imposing defensive player on earth can't be imposing because he can't jump and he can barely move. And I'm talking about Joel Embiid in the Philadelphia 76ers. I figured you'd want to go there because you're a New Yorker and you're loud like a New Yorker.
Oh,
and
man. Nothing is as loud as the group chat that I'm in with all these. I'm inundated. Let me tell you something. StatMuse.
Yes.
Basketball Reference, StatHead. There's all these great resources. We live in a golden age of resources for looking up stats.
Right.
I love all these sites. I appreciate them. I urge you that as long as the Knicks are in the playoffs, just turn it off. Because I cannot, the number of like obscure stats that are getting thrown at me as proof that the Knicks are a team of destiny in this group chat that I'm with all these crazy Knicks fan family members and friends. I mean, I've had enough, man. and it sucks because they are good and like they are likable. It's funny, like players are like, Jalen Brunson is likable. Josh Hart is extremely likable. Like, they don't have, like, for a team that's tough and blue collar, they don't really have like a villain.
Right.
Or a
right,
dude.
Right.
They're like, man, I don't like that dude. Having said that, their villain is their fan base. Dude, they lit a Joel Embiid jersey on fire outside the arena.
I saw that like this morning. Like, what is wrong with these people?
And then they chanted Trae Young for a good measure. Trae Young is in St. Bart's or something right now. Like, oh, let me see what's happening in the NBA playoffs. Open up his phone. Like, Trae Young. Like, I'm not even playing.
Knicks fans. And here's the thing. I don't know how healthy or unhealthy. Like, Joel Embiid is hurt. Like, I forgot whoever said it on the broadcast because it's one of those choppy moments. It might have been J.J. Redick. And it was like, or maybe it was Lisa Salters. I can't remember who it was. Like, so don't give me the lying here. But it was something along the lines of after he had the dunk and he came down hard and looked like he was looking at the heavens and he saw Stacy from the Wood coming down with his fist. You know what I mean? Like, he looked like that.
And I saw the light. Oh, no, that's just Stacy's fist.
That's just Stacy's fist, right? When he was looking down, they were like, well, he has to understand that the surgically repaired knee, like, there's nothing wrong there. He's not going to hurt himself. Hey, man, how do we know he ain't going to be hurt again? Like, who's to say with the way that he is limping and dragging that leg around there? Like, it reached a point in the second half where he couldn't hit jump shots because he couldn't jump, and you can't put him in the post because I don't think he necessarily has like a sophisticated post game to where you need to run and double him. Like he's better, I feel like he's better facing than he is back to basket, 1 foot in the paint, given a drop step. Like, I don't think that's the best usage of his game at this point.
Yeah, I think he's, I like his post game. You're right. I do agree. He's a better face up player than he is back to the basket, but I think he's got some stuff down there. I think what you're seeing is just like, he saw, like you said, he saw Stacey's fist, right? And just like my man, Big Mike from the Wood, he didn't die. Stacey didn't kill him, right? Like Joel Embiid was able to give it a go in the second half, but there's still a level of like, fear factor, because let's just say it right now. You know, he got hurt. He left. He got cleared in the halftime. He came back in the second half. That was the most spectacular injury I've ever seen in my life. Spectacular meaning like I've never seen anyone get injured doing something that cool. Usually, it's tragic. You know, like
it's tragic as all
Paul
hell.
Paul George running into the stanchion and breaking his leg. Derrick Rose landing bad. Sean Livingston dribbling up the floor and like his knee buckling or whatever. It's never, oh man, he did some cool, oh my God, is he okay? Because this dude threw it off the backboard and dunked on OG Anunoby hard. Like not just like, oh, just let me get it up there. Like, no, I'm going to slam on you. And then he landed and man, let's be honest, Vinny, the reason why most people were most terrified, it's not just because it's Joel Embiid and his injury history. It's not because of the way he fell. It's because the way his eye, one eye was flickering and the other one was just staring. Bro, that was I thought he was like, is he about to have a seizure? What's happening here?
Thank goodness he wasn't, right? Like, yeah. Thank goodness he came back. And for the purposes of tonight, by the time this comes out, for those who won't know, Tyrese Maxey is questionable because of an illness. I would assume that unless he can't play, he will play in these things. You just give him the shoot around off. You figure out, you know, the fluids and everything else. Flu-like symptoms can mean a bunch of different things, especially, you know, given the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how Philly became this big bad wolf. When they've never been the big bad wolf, like just because you fired Doc Rivers, just because, you know, things change, I don't know how they've become the playoff boogeyman when they've never been the playoff boogeyman.
I'll tell you how. It's remember the show Mad TV? It used to come on Fox.
Yes.
They had this bit, this segment they called Lowered Expectations. The Philadelphia 76ers started this year. Hey, they're doing pretty good. Hey, they've got one of the best records in the East. Maybe they fight with Boston. Who's going to be one? But we were like, yeah, y'all are still Philly, though. And then Joel Embiid gets hurt, and things unravel, and they topple from 2 to 3 to 4 to 5. To 6. Oh, my God, they're in the play-in. Oh, my God, they might be like the 8 in the play-in. Like, they might have to go to Miami or Indiana or whatever to play in this play-on game. And then Embiid comes back. And it's like, oh, we thought he was going to be done, but he's back. And they win. And they go on a little winning streak. And so when you fall rock bottom and you start to climb back up, it's like, oh, no one wants to see the Sixers. Oh, the Sixers. Oh, watch out for the Sixers. That's the team that nobody wants to match up with in the playoffs. But that's just talk because our lowered expectations for them. If they were still the 2 or the 3 seed, we wouldn't be talking about them as the boogeyman in the East.
Right. No, we wouldn't. And no, I don't think the Knicks have anything necessarily to worry about. Enjoy your... Look, tell Knicks fans to enjoy their round. But this is what I really want to get to. The transition of power is never peaceful.
Oh, man.
It is snatched from one era to the next. And one thing my man Ant loves to do is to tell you how old you jokers are.
Yeah.
He said that to Kawhi Leonard. He said that to Kevin Durant. That was a beautiful moment in a beautiful game where Ant said, time's up, old man. It didn't matter who the old man was. It had to be Kevin Durant. Time's up, dog.
You know, he's the badass little kid that part of you is like, get me my belt. Let me teach you some manners. But also, you're like, damn. He's got a point. we were doing a bit for Oddball where we were talking about we're comparing, like, hey, what, based off of that commercial with Nikola Jokic for Despicable Me.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Where he plays like Gru. Like, what other NBA players would you liken with animated characters? And so the one I gave was Anthony Edwards is Simba from The Lion King, but young Simba before his dad dies. This is, I just can't wait to be king.
Yes,
cocky. Let everybody know, like, hey man, this is about to be my now, right? And so, I mean, he was spectacular. And the Wolves have every right to feel good. This is what I'm going to say. Kevin Durant is not a long in the tooth lion quite yet. He's still Kevin Durant. We saw that in the first quarter. And I think the big thing about the playoffs is adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
What are the adjustments the Phoenix Suns are going to make? Because the adjustment I would say is beyond, we got to get Book going, we got to get Beal and on. The adjustment I would say is, we got to let Kevin Durant cook these mugs. Like, oh, you guys got you the best defense? Okay, let's see it now. Let's now, when we force the issue, let's see how that works. And that was the vibe I got of a Durant in the post-game press conference. It was kind of like, there was no panic in his voice. It reminded me a lot of when they played the Clippers in the first round a few years ago when he was with the Warriors. And that game one where Patrick Beverley was woofing and doing all this stuff and Durant had a fairly pedestrian game. And then they oh, what adjustments? And he's like, guys, I'm Kevin Durant, man. Like, relax. And what did he do? He came back the next game. And
you know,
he was
spectacular. You know who I am.
Yep.
You know who I am.
I don't, like, while I applaud Anthony Edwards' bravado of, like you said, snatching crowns. He's not like, may I have it? Is it my turn yet? He's coming here telling you, it's my turn to be king. But I'm going to tell you, Simba also had to take his ass and hang out with Timon and Pumbaa for a little bit before he became king. It's sweet now, but like, them hyenas, dog.
Are you saying Kevin Durant is still in the dungeon saying, be prepared?
Yeah, he's Scar. He's letting all the hyenas know, hey man, we got to run these guys.
He might actually be Scar because people don't respect Kevin Durant the way that they should. And I'm still giving, look, the one thing the Suns should be doing is not just letting KD cook. How about we do something like make the game easier for Kevin Durant to cook? Because that makes life easier for everybody. And not just having Kevin Durant on an island guarding Anthony Edwards from 30 feet out. What in the hell are we doing?
That, and also offensively, the world's most expensive decoy. Hey, maybe we run stuff for him. Like, you know, maybe we act like we have Kevin Durant and not, like, it's not a lesser version of Kevin Durant, ladies and gentlemen. Like, he's still Kevin Durant. It's just, that's how Frank Vogel using him, I guess. So it's nice. Again, this is what the playoffs is great, is that
it's
you can
match.
Play a certain way for 82 games,
mm-hmm.
and even for game one. And then in the 48 to 72 hours before you play game two, come up with a completely different game plan. And then say, okay, your turn.
This is going to be glorious. Like the game ones weren't all necessarily super competitive, but they were really compelling. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to the rest of the first round. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Amin El Hassan. Thanks to giving him some of his time today from Phoenix. He's going to be out in the playoff streets, which means y'all just be careful when you see Amin out in post game. Hey, That's all I'm gonna say.
I'll give y'all my schedule. Wednesday, I'll be in Boston for game two, of Celtics Heat. Then Friday and Sunday, I'm back here in Phoenix to see Scar versus Simba.
Amin El Hassan, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget to subscribe to Oddball and Cinephobe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast. He and Charlotte Wilder are there. And on Cinephobe, that is you and
Zach Harper.
That is you and Zach Harper. I love Zach. I don't know. Sorry, Zach. Forgot your name for a quick second. But thanks to producer John and Brett, who's here in LA with me, or Playa Vista, and everybody else that works hard from behind the scenes on this podcast. I'll be back on Wednesday with Tom Haberstroh for another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.